Beis Adaf Yud Aleph. We are on Yud Amud Beis. We are halfway down the Amud, first wide line, working on a Mishnah from Yud Amud Beis. The Mishnah tells us that you must assign and designate the birds prior to Yantif in order to make sure that you are in fact going to be taking these birds and using these birds on Yantif, and to make sure that you are totally committed and you are not going to back out. So there needs to be a Zeman, there needs to be an assignment, a designation, almost like an invitation, that these, in fact, are the birds that you're going to use. In the previous Mishnah, Brachlok is between Beisham and Beis Hillel, how exactly Zeman is done, whether pointing is sufficient, Shitas Beis Hillel, or you have to be Minnaneh, you have to shake it, Shitas Beis Shammai. And this Mishnah over here from yesterday's daf goes through various scenarios in which you were Mizamein, but then when you wake up the next morning, there is some very serious evidence that these are not the birds that you were Mizamein from the previous day. So, for example, the Mishnah brought down that if, let's say, you were Mizamein the previous day blackbirds, and the next day you wake up and the birds are white, so clearly these are not the birds that you were Mizamein, they're not the birds, and because you weren't Mizamein them prior to Yantav, you can't use these birds. Mishnah went through a number of other scenarios. The Mishnah went over a case where you were Mizamein two birds, next day there are three birds, one of those birds obviously is a bird that you were not Mizamein, all three of them are Aser. Tosos dealt with the question, why don't we just simply say Bittul under those circumstances? Tosos gives answers. Regardless, the Mishnah also gave a scenario in which you were Mizamein three birds and the next day there were two birds. Mishnah says under those circumstances the two birds are Mutter. The reason why those two birds are Mutter is because the Mishnah is obviously working with the assumption that those two birds that are remaining are from the original three. The Gemara now is going to be discussing this exact scenario. So with the simple explanation that the two birds are from the original and one of them just simply went away. So now it would seem like our Mishnah over here is following the sheet of Rebbe, not the sheet of the Chachamim. And the Gemara introduces us to this machlokas. Mishnah over here that we're quoting from is regarding Maaser Sheni. And it is talking about a scenario in which you put Maaser Sheni away. Obviously, in anticipation of the next time you go up to Yerushalayim. So you're going to be taking your Maaser Sheni with you, spending your Maaser Sheni on food, eating that food in Yerushalayim. So over here, we are at the point where you're just simply storing your Maaser Sheni money in your house. You're locked away in some sort of chest, wallet, vault, whatever the case is. You locked away 100. And the next time you went and checked it, it was 200. And you don't have any clear memory in terms of explaining the discrepancy. So what now becomes of this new 200 that you have? According to Shitas Rebbe, we will assume that the first 100 is from the original Maaser Sheni you put in, and the other 100, even though you have no clear explanation of what it is, so we're going to assume that's chulin, and therefore you have Maaser Sheni and chulin mixed together. Chachamim will tell you that no, being that the numbers are not the same, so the Chachamim are going to elect to offer the following explanation. The 100 that was there has been removed, and at another point in time, someone put in 200 of chulin. Similarly, the Mishnah goes on to describe, hiniach masayim umatzamanim. If let's say you put in 200, and the next time you check your 100, there's only 100, and once again, you have no clear memory to explain how exactly the numbers went from 200 down to 100. So, mane munach, mane muto div Rebbe. So once again, Rebbe takes the very straightforward explanation that the 100 was removed, but only 100 of the 200, and the remaining 100 was from the original. The Chachamim will tell you that everything is in fact chulin. Once again, the Chachamim are operating with an assumption that, despite the fact that you have no clear memory in terms of what happened, but what we're going to say is that someone removed the 200 altogether, replaced it with a new 100, and the assumption is that this 100 is in fact going to be chulin. Comes out now that as long as we draw an analogy between this Braisa, Maaser Sheni, and our Mishnah, it will come out now that the Svara, that whatever's remaining is of the original, that Svara belongs to Rebbe, and our Mishnah therefore represents the position of Rebbe. It bothers the Gemara. How could it be that our Mishnah over here is only representing the position of Rebbe? Our Mishnah over here is a Stam Mishnah. It's an anonymous Mishnah. And meanwhile, it's following the sheet of Rebbe, not the sheet of the Chachamim. So that's why the Gemara suggests as follows. Afilu Tamei Rabbanan. Our Mishnah could be going like the sheet of the Chachamim as well. So let's take a look at our Mishnah and make a really simple distinction between our Mishnah and the case of Maaser Sheni. Maaser Sheni, we're talking about money. Money is an inanimate object. How did the money move? There's only one way it moved, and that is someone picked up the money. Once we're saying someone picked up the money, it makes the most sense, according to the Chachamim, that it's all or nothing. Somebody picked up all the money or none of the money. And that's why we don't say that if there were 200 and 100, and now there's 100, so it must be that the 100 are from the original. If, in fact, someone picked up the money, it must be that someone picked up all the money. Mashiach came when it comes to birds. Birds, obviously, are living entities bouncing around in that birdhouse. And it could very well be that one bird just simply picked up and left. So this distinction that Gemara just made is a really simple and seemingly excellent distinction between the two Mishnayos. The Gemara now wants to know, was this distinction even necessary? Meaning, we need to go over a little bit more information regarding that Braisa of Maaser Sheni. Once we see this bit more of information, it's going to come out now that we didn't even need to give this answer. As good as an answer as it was, we didn't need to give it based on the following upcoming information. Why was this answer even necessary? Meanwhile, the Gemara notes that within this machlokus regarding Maaser Sheni, there is a sub-machlokus between Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Yochanan, how to properly frame the machlokus of the Mishnah. Chadamar b'shnei kisim machlokus. One position is that, yes, there's a machlokus between Rabbi and the Chachamim, but that's when the monies were in two separate wallets. Aval b'kisecha d'vrakol chulin. But if the monies were in one wallet, so everyone would agree that it's chulin. Now, from a rationale standpoint, stands to reason. If all the monies were found in one wallet, it really stands to reason that if somebody's going to take some of the money, someone's going to take all the money. On the other hand, if the monies were divided in two separate wallets, so not necessarily. So that's why, at least in this first presentation, if in fact the monies were in two separate wallets, machlokes between Rebbe and the Chachamim, whether we say that whatever's remaining is from the original. However, if the money was found in one wallet, so at least in this first version, different halakha according to everybody, if somebody's going to take the money, someone's going to take all the money. Chanamar, now the Gemara points out that there's another way to see this machlokus between Rebbe and the Chachamim, and that is b'kis echad machlokus. They're arguing when the monies are in one kiss. Aval b'shnei kisim, but if the monies were found in two separate wallets, divrei halakha manamunach, manamuta. So then according to everybody, if, let's say you had 200, and they were divided in two separate wallets, 100 in each wallet, and now you come back and you find 100 missing from one of the wallets, so in the second version, we're going to say that the 100 of the that's remaining is in fact going to be of the original. And once again, if you think about it, it makes a lot of sense. If the monies were in fact found in two separate wallets, so one could now argue that just because money was taken from one doesn't necessarily mean that money was also taken from the other one as well. Now, the Gemara is about to point out, if we're going to work with the second way to understand the machlokes between Rebbe and the Chachamim, so then our Mishnah is comparable to what? Kis echad or shnei kisim? The Gemara's assumption is, of course, is that our Mishnah is comparable to shnei kisim. Two birds are two separate distinct entities, much like two wallets are two separate and distinct entities. And therefore, it certainly stands to reason that our Mishnah is like the case of Shnei Kisim, and according to the second way we just presented it, in the case of Shnei Kisim, there is no machlokus. Both Rebbe and the Chachamim would agree that you say that whatever is remaining in one of them is from the original. Comes out now, if this is true, so then you don't even need to give any answers whatsoever to explain our Mishnah, because our Mishnah is going according to Divrei Hakol. And the Gemara is just simply going to spell all this out. Everything that we just outlined, the Gemara is going to spell it out. Bishlam alamanda amar, bishnekizim achlokas hanadistrach lishnuya hacha shani gozo solos vasun ledados. Elamanda amar, because echa machlokas, avar bishnekizim divrako manamuna manamuta, hashta lamali lishnuya Allah. Hamar bishnekizim lo pligim. So effectively, I know I read that quickly, but effectively the Gemara just simply said that if in fact the machlokas is between Rebbe and the Chachamim is only by Kisecha. But in the case of Shnei Kisim, they agree. And since our Mishnah is analogous to the case of Shnei Kisim, so now it comes out that our Mishnah is going according to everybody. Therefore, question didn't even get off the ground. To which the Gemara responds, Am Rav Ashi. So Rav Ashi says, well, not necessarily. Maybe there still is going to be a question. Because even though this second way says that when it comes to Kis Echad, there's a machlokus, but when it comes to Shnei Kisim, there is no machlokus, maybe Kis Echad is not to be understood the way we originally understood it. That it means that the monies are found in one wallet. Rav Ashi says, Hacha begozos mekusharim, the kisim mekusharim askinan. The way Rashi understands it is that when Rebbe and the Chachamim are arguing about the monies, and we said that the kis echad they agree, kis echad could be understood, not that the monies were in one wallet, but rather the monies are in two wallets. How are we describing two wallets as kis echad? The two wallets were tied together. There was some sort of knot knotting together these two wallets, and that's why it's described in the Braisa as kis echad. Masha'in kain, if the wallets are not tied together, so that's now considered shnei kisim. Now, comes out that the kis echad, so what do we say? We said that by kis echad, so there's a machlokes between Rebbe and the Chachamim. And the according to the Shita of Rebbe, munach matamutal, and according to the Chachamim, we don't say that whatever's left over is from the original, but rather we say that everything was taken. And the Gemara now goes on to explain that if, in fact, the Kis Echad is talking about where the monies are tied together, and now we have to assume that the case of the birds are analogous, where the birds are tied together, so according to the Chachamim, why should there be a difference? Now, if at this point in time you're a little bit confused, perfectly understandable. The Gemara over here is an involved and intricate Gemara. So, but if you're following up until this point in time, what we need to do is make a distinction between our new understanding of Kis Echad, where the birds are tied together, just like the wallets are tied together. And if that's true, for Rebbe, meaning Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi, the halach is going to be the same. But according to the Chachamim, the halach is different, and now the Gemara is going to explain why, in fact, the halach is different. So, gozos menatche adade, kisla menatche adade. Since the birds are in motion, so therefore the strings can be attached, could be detached, and that would mean now that even though they were tied together, it is understandable and a fair explanation that the birds became untied from one another, uncoupled from one another, and that's why we could say that one bird left, one bird remained, but that was from the original. Masha'in came when it comes to the wallets. It's really hard to imagine that the wallets are going to get undone once they're tied together. The wallets, of course, are inanimate. They are not moving. And so we have to assume, therefore, that they were always tied together. And that means that if somebody took money from one, then he also took money from the other one as well. Now we know that Rebbe disagrees with the Chachamim. How could Rebbe disagree with the Chachamim? How could it be that Rebbe takes the position that when I have two wallets that are tied together, so somebody would take from one and not from the other, if in fact they're tied up? So the Gemara goes on to explain, V'Rebbe amalacha kisim nami zimnin dimint akal kishrayu. So even when it comes to the wallets, even when they're tied together, but it could very well be that the knot will become undone, even on its own, even though the wallets don't move. And so therefore, just like when it comes to the birds, we could say that the strings will be undone. Rebbe would argue that the same thing is true regarding the wallets, even though that's obviously a more difficult argument to make, considering the fact that the wallets obviously don't move. Okay, that kind of takes us to the end of our first sugya of the daf. Admittedly, a difficult sugya. But basically, to just summarize, our Mishnah says that if you pre-selected prior to Yantif three birds, and the next morning you wake up and you find that the two birds, so we'll assume that those two birds are from the original. The Mishnah in Maaser Sheni brings down a machlokes between Rebbe and the Chachamim on a similar circumstance regarding Maaser Sheni. Our Mishnah seems to be more in line with Rebbe as opposed to the Chachamim, and the Gemara went through a good amount of analysis wondering whether or not our Mishnah could also be understood within the framework and the shita of the Chachamim. Good. That brings us to where we are right now. Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, top of the Amud. B'socha kana maso l'fnei kana surin. So let's say you selected the birds at the time of selection, they were in the birdhouse, and the next day, Yantav morning, you find them in front. So the Mishnah says it's asur. Now le'me m'sayi le'le Rabbi Chanina. So it would now sound like our Mishnah would be a strong support for the shita of Rabbi Chanina. Exact discussion like we had yesterday, where I have two values, I have two determinants. One is rov, the other is karov. So vis-a-vis the birds. So the birds that are now found on the perch, Karav will tell us that they came from the closest place. What's the closest place? Obviously, the birds that were located prior to Yom Tov that were in the birdhouse. On the other hand, we also have a value, a determinant of rov, meaning the vast majority of the birds are located outside of the birdhouse. Birds that you obviously did not select. The Mishnah tells us that it's aser. Our Mishnah now would seem to be weighing in very clearly on the issue of when I have the value of rov, and it is pitted against the value of karov, rov is going to be karov. The Gemara says not necessarily. Amar Abaye Bedaf. So Abaye says that it could very well be that we're talking about where there was a perch on the front of the birdhouse. And we explained this yesterday, and let's explain this quickly today. So with a perch on the front of the birdhouse, so you have outside birds visiting the birdhouse on the perch all the time. So that means to say that it's not rov versus karov, but rather it's karov versus karov. Meaning the birds inside obviously are karov. The birds that were selected prior to Yom Tov that were inside are obviously karov. All the birds that are outside coming from wherever, right, whatever, wherever other parts of the world are now also going to be spending time on the front of the birdhouse, on this daf on the front of the birdhouse. So they too are now going to be considered karov. So it's karov versus karov. And then of course, take into consideration that the birds that are on the perch are also representative of the rov. In other words, that's the vast majority of the birds in this world. So now the equation is, it's karov versus karov and rov. So under those circumstances, obviously, we're going to go with the birds on the perch and not the birds inside, from inside the birdhouse. Rav Amar b'shnei kinim zula malamizu askinan. Rava gives a somewhat different answer, a little bit more detailed, but basically what Rava's trying to accomplish, the goal of Rava is the same as Abaye, in that our Mishnah is not really speaking to the idea of Rov versus Karov. What is the explanation according to Rava? So the following. There are levels of birdhouses, first floor, second floor. So let's say you pre-selected the birds in the first floor, not the birds in the second floor, and then umatsa betachton v'lo matsa be'alyona. So you found birds in the lower, but in front of the lower, but not the upper. The asirin, under those circumstances, it's going to be asadamrin, because under those circumstances, hanachazul la'ama, because here's what we're going to say, that the birds in the lower birdhouse, so they just simply went away. Vahanach, and the birds that are located now in front of the lower, so ishtarvu veishtarve venachis. They just simply slid down from the upper, and now they're there, but they obviously are birds that were not selected. Ela afilu, but we can even go in the other direction as well. Zimun belyon velo zimun betachtonu. Let's say you set aside the birds in the upper birdhouse, not the ones in the lower. Uva matzah belyon velo matzah betachtonu, and then the next day you find birds perched in front of the upper, but not the lower. Hanach nami asirin, that too would be asir as well. Da'aminan, hanach azle, la'alma, the birds in the top just simply run away. V'hanach siruche sarachu sliku. And now the birds that are currently there on the front of the second floor actually are from the first floor. And what they did is they just simply climbed and made their way up to get to the second floor. And once again, the point is that we can make an argument that the birds of the second floor are not from the original, but rather from the ones in the first floor. But the point is still basically the same. It's not row versus karov. Obviously, the first floor is also considered a karov as well. V'im ein sham elahein hare elu mutarim. So hechidami. So the Gemara says, now if all I had was just from the original birds, so then it's going to be mutar. The Gemara says a little more clarity over here. Ilema b'mifurachim. Are we talking about birds that are able to fly? Obviously, once birds are able to fly, so then you can make a really strong argument that even though these seem like the birds that I set aside, but being that they have the ability to fly, you can easily argue the birds flew away and these are just simply different birds. So ela b'midadin. So the Gemara says that the birds right now cannot fly. All they can do is just simply hop around. So the Gemara now notes, so what is going to be the total area that, the total distance that a bird will hop? So the Gemara has a Mesorah, Chazal have a Mesorah that they will not hop more than 50 amos. So if I have another nest within 50 amos, so now we have to assume that maybe they swapped. And idaleka kan besoch hamishamama pshita de mutarim. Now, if there's no other nest within 50 amos, so then for sure it's going to be mutar. And now the Gemara now wants to know, once we have this Mesorah of 50 Amos, so then what's our mission telling us? Birds that can't fly but only can hop. And if I have a nest within 50 Amos, so then we have to be concerned for a swap. And if there is no nest within 50 Amos, so then there is no concern. But what's our mission now teaching us? So the Gemara says, and then the Gemara just simply gives us this Mesorah. So the Gemara says, so the Gemara says, okay, we will inject a chiddush in our Mishnah. There is another nest that's within 50 amos. Ukagon de kama bekeren zavis. Happens to be that it's not within view of this birdhouse. And Rashi goes on to describe that basically one birdhouse is around the corner of another birdhouse. So even though distance-wise they're within 50 amos of one another, there just simply is no visibility. And now the chiddush is, ma'u detema adeduya adedu. Well, it's in within 50 amos, they're going to be hopping one within the other. So the Gemara says a little bit about the nature of birds and birds hopping. They will only go a distance of 50 amos if they can still retain sight of the original nest that they're coming from. But once they lose visual of the nest in which they're coming from, so they won't hop, not even 50 amos. We are up to the Gemara on Yud Aleph. Sorry, we're up to the Mishnah on Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. Beit Shammai Omrim Ein Notlin Es Ha'Eli L'Katzev Alav Basar. One cannot take the Eli. The Eli in the mortar and pestle, so the part that is used for the smashing, forgive me, I forgot which one's which, but the part that's used for the smashing, so that's called the Eli. The Eli, Rashi described both yesterday and today's daf as a Kli HaMalach Shemalach L'Isser. So obviously, Ketisha is one of the things that you're not allowed to do on Yontif. We'll talk a little bit more about it in the upcoming Dapim, in that there are malachas. We touched on this back on Dap Gimel. There are a number of malachas that one cannot do on Yontif, despite the fact that Ochel Nefesh is mutter, but still, there are a host of malachas. In fact, the vast majority of them are not going to be permitted on Yontif itself. So pounding is one of them. So the Katsev is... Sorry, the Eli is a Kli that is a Kli Shemalach Lister on Yantif. Therefore, it's Muksa. Therefore, you're not allowed to move it. Yet, according to Beis Hillel, let's go through Beis Shammai. Beis Shammai Omim Ein Notlin Esa Eli Katzav Alav Basar. So one is not allowed to move this Eli, even if you want to cut meat on top of it. A little bit hard to visualize exactly how you're cutting meat on top of it. Doesn't matter. The point is that it's a Kli Shemalach Lister. You can't use it according to Beis Shammai. Now, Beis Hillel says under those circumstances, it's going to be mutter. So you have what's called Simchas Yontif. Obviously, this allowance that you are encouraged to prepare foods and meats for Yontif. And so therefore, even though it's Muksa, so you're allowed to move it on Yontif. The Tosfos over here, you could see the second Tosfos over here, is bothered by a simple question. If the Eli is a Kli Shemalach L'Isser, so we know that as a rule, on Shabbos, every Kli Shemalach L'Isser, you're allowed to move, either L'Tzarach Guf or L'Tzarach Mekama. Over here, if I'm doing something which is Mutter, so then I'm allowed to move it, and I don't need a special heter of Simchas Yontif. Tosfos goes on to suggest that maybe over here the Eli does not just fall under the category of Muksa Machmas Isser, maybe it falls under the category of Muksa Machmas Kisar and Kis. It's a higher level of Muksa, therefore a something which is Muksa Machmas Kisar and Kis, you're not allowed to move. L'tzarach Guf, L'tzarach Mekama. Therefore, you need the heter of Simchas Yontif. See the second Tosfos, who basically makes this point. Back to the Mishnah. Beis Shammai Omrim Ein Notlin Es Ha'Or Lifnei Hadorson Velo Yag Bi'enu Ela Im Ken Yeshimo Kizayis Baser. So two chumras by Beis Shammai regarding the hides. Yishechten an animal on Yontif. Now, obviously, the meat you're going to be cutting up, roasting it, eating it, good. But also, with every animal that you shecht, you're going to be having a lot of hide. Now, the hide is going to be worked over and made into shoes, a purse, etc., etc. The obvious problem is that on Yontif, you obviously have no heter to do so. In fact, doing so would be a violation of the malacha of being ma'abed, of working the leather. So Beit Shammai basically takes the position, that's right. So you can't even lay the hide down in front of people where they're going to be walking on top of it. You cannot pick it up. It's going to be a davar muksa. And so and the only way you can move it is only if there's still meat attached to it. You need a kazayas of meat attached to it in order to move it. That is the shita of Beis Shammai. Uveisola matir, and Abesol says it would be mutter. Presumably, both points would be mutter. In other words, you're allowed to put it in front of people where they're going to be walking, even though when the people are walking on it, that's already the beginning of the process of pounding it and starting the tanning process, but Beisel allows for that. That will slow down the decay of the hide. Additionally, Beisel says that you're allowed to move it, meaning it's not muksa. Good. So, Tana. V'shav mishim katzav ala basar sh'asar l'tatala. The first point of the Gemara is that even though we had a machlokes between Beishamah and Beisel regarding whether or not one can move the Eli, Beishamah says you can, Beisel says you can. So, even though Beisel is a mako, but once the meat is cut, so it's at this point in time that there's no longer a heter of Simchas Yontif, and therefore you can't move the Eli anymore. Continuing in the Gemara, Amar Rabbi Machlokes Be'Eli, the entire debate in our Mishnah is regarding the Masha. Ava B'Tavra Garme, but if we're talking about a really, really thick board that's used for the cutting of bones, so Divrei Hakol Mutar, according to everybody, it would be Mutar. Pshit, the Gemara says, I think it's obvious because Eli Tanan Ma'u Detema, sorry, our Mishnah is only talking about the Eli, which means that a cutting board seemingly would be something that we could be more lax in. So the Gemara says, not necessarily Ma'u Detema Hu Adin Da'afilu Tavra Garmi Nami. Could very well be that as much as Beishamah and Beisola are arguing about an Eli, they would also be arguing about a cutting board. And the Eli over here is just simply to highlight, to really show how lenient Shita's Beisil is. A Eli is a Kli Shemalach Le'Isser. So Nami Sharu. So, and yet, he's going to permit that. So Kamash Malan. So that's why the Mishnah spoke about Eli, but Hu Adin, the Machlokes between Beisham and Beisil would not just be regarding Eli, but it would also be regarding this big cutting board. Igadar Amri, now in a slightly different variation of explaining our Mishnah, Amar Abai Lo Nitzucha Ela Afilu Tavragami Chadati. Not only is our Mishnah going to be debating the Eli, but it's going to be arguing about a brand new cutting board. So Ma'u Detema Mimlach Velo Tavar Allah. So I might have thought that what you're going to do is take it out, but because it's brand new, have a change of heart and not use it. So Kamash Malan. So the Chiddush is, no, we're not concerned about that. So the Gemara says, now wait one second. So you're telling me that if it comes to a brand new cutting board, so you're telling me that under those circumstances, Beit Shammai would not be concerned that you're going to change your mind, and it comes out now that you took it, you put it back, you didn't use it, tiltul shelo l'tzarach. But the Gemara wants to know, but I do find a number of other places in Halacha where Beit Shammai is actually concerned about this very issue, where you take something because you think you're going to use it, and then you end up not using it on Yantiv, and that's tiltul shelo l'tzarach. The Gemara gives a couple of examples. V'atanya, we learned in one example, Beishamay Armim Ein Molich and Tafach V'Sakan Eitzel Behema. One is not allowed to take the butcher and the knife to the animal. V'lo Behema Eitzel Tafach V'Sakan, or take the animal to the butcher and to the knife. Beisol Armim Molichin Ze Eitzel Ze. And Beisol says, no problem at all. You can make a shidduch and bring the one to the other. Beishamay Armim Ein Molich and Tafach V'Madoch Eitzel Meducha. And Beit Shammai says that, look, if there is a large distance that needs to be traveled in order to get the mortar to the pestle or the other way around, so Beit Shammai says you cannot do that. Beisola says that you are allowed to do that. Beisola omrim, molichin zeh eitzol zeh. Now what comes out over here is that Beisola is not worried that you're going to go through all this trouble and end up changing your mind. And presumably Beit Shammai argues on this very point. You are going to go through all this trouble, and you run the risk of changing your mind, and if in fact you change your mind, turns out that it was tiltul shelo l'tzarach. And so now the Gemara is bothered because we said that by the big cutting board, the bone-breaking cutting board, so we said that Beit Shammai is not worried that a person is going to go through a mimlech, a reneging, a changing of his mind. And meanwhile, in these other cases, Beit Shammai is concerned. That seems to be consistent, the Gemara explains. Hachi hashta. So in the case of the animal, in the case of the spices, so you could do an about face. In other words, you haven't really started the process yet. All you did is just get everything together to start the process. But at that point in time, You could decide regarding the animal. We're going to find something nicer, something plumper. We're going to go about the spices. We're going to get better spices. But hacha, but over here, in terms of that bone breaking cutting board, so hacha mai ikala memar, what are you going to say over here? Mimlach, velo taver, kevin de shachta, litibira kaima. But over here, since you shechted it, so you shechted the animal already, so at that point in time, the process has started, you have no choice but to cut the bones. In other words, you have to cut the meat, you have to cut the bones. So it's at that point in time where Beis Shammai is no longer concerned that if I break it out, if I bring it out, I may change my mind. You're not going to change your mind once the process already has been started, once you already shechted the animal. Beis Shammai omrim einos din esa or. Gemara now discusses more regarding the hide. Tana v'shavim shemochin ala basar litzli. The Gemara introduces us to a heter. And that is that look. Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel argue, to what degree can we manipulate the hide after you shechted the animal? You shechted the animal, you now have this really large piece of hide, where if left totally untreated and unworked, you run the risk of losing that hide. And, we didn't say this back in the Mishnah, but now's a good opportunity to make this point even clearer. And if you run the risk of losing the hide, now what? So aside from the fact that you're going to suffer financial loss, the next Yontov comes around, you obviously will be much less interested in shechting an animal if you know that you run financial loss possibilities. So therefore, what the Chachamim really want to do is give you ways of, at least, you can't be ma'abe, you can't work the hide, but there are things that you could do to actually start the process. So we already know our Mishnah, Beis Hillel says, yeah, you could put it in front of people walking, and by them stepping on it, you're going to be starting the process. You can't do anything more than that, but Beis Hillel allows for that. Now, Beis Shammai does not allow for that, but what Abaye is about to teach us, what the Braisa is about to teach us is that there are positions where Beis Shammai is in fact going to yield a little bit to Beis Hillel. Bishavim, they both agree. Shomulchen al basa, let's sleep. You're holding the meat over the hide. So salting the hide itself obviously is out of the question because that would be ibud. But if you're salting the meat over the hide, and some of the salt will happen to fall on the hide, that would be fine. But the Gemara says that it has to be a light salting. The Gemara describes it as melicha litzli. When you roast an animal, really you don't need to put any salt on the animal. No salt is required in order to extract the blood. The roasting process itself is going to extract the blood. So why are you salting it? Because meat tastes a little bit better when it's salted. So if you're doing just a light dusting of the salt and it happens to be the meat's over the hide, that's fine. Amar Abai lo shanu litzli avala kader lo. So Abai just wants to make sure that we know that only a light salting, but not a heavy salting, meaning what you and I call melicha, meaning salting that extracts the blood, that's no good. Meaning that's too much salt going on the meat and eventually it's going to fall onto the hide, and now you're going to be in violation of some form of ibud that you can't do. So the Gemara says, look, Abai, thank you very much for letting us know, but the truth of the matter is, a simple reading of the Braisa would indicate that. Pshita, litzli tana. Well, the Braisa said, litzli, what else did you think the Braisa meant? So akamash malan, dafil litzli, ke'in kedera aser. So the Gemara says that even though you plan on roasting it, anything more than a light dusting of salt, a salt to taste, anything more than that is going to be out of the question. So even if you roast it, but you happen to want to add more salt, that's unacceptable. So this heter of allowing a little bit of salt to fall on the hide is just that, a little bit of salt. Tana Rabbanan, Gemara quotes a Braisa. Ein mochen es achalavin, ve'ein mehafchen behem. Much like the financial loss that we talked about regarding the hide, so there's also going to be another financial loss, and that is regarding the chalev. The hard fats of an animal, after you shecht an animal, so we are speaking where there is no refrigeration, obviously. And so now, if those fats are not treated, so those fats are going to go bad. And once again, you're going to lose all that good fat. That chalev, although we are prohibited to eat it, it's an isser, not only an isser min haTorah, but it's an isser, it's a chi of kares, if one eats it. But nevertheless, it's mutar bahana. And you could use it for soap, detergent. You could use it for fuel, for illumination. So there are a lot of good uses. However, if you shecht an anyantiv and don't treat it at all anyantiv, so you're going to lose it. And once again, it comes back to the issue of, and if you know that going into the shechita, it's really going to make you pause and really hesitate to shecht, knowing that you run the risk of all this financial loss. So the Tanakhama, this Brisa, effectively says it's unfortunate, but there's nothing you could do to treat the chalev. Mishum Rabbi Yeshua Amru, Shotchan Beruach Agabe Yesedos. So Rabbi Yeshua in the Brisa gives a small heter, and that is you're allowed to air them out. Put them on pegs, have them, have a breeze go through them, and somehow, in ways that obviously I don't know, I have no field experience on this, but if you give a good airflow, so then it's not going to decay, it's not going to rot, and you'll be able to use it for the future after Yontif. Amarav Masna, halach Rabbi Yeshua, Ikedamri, Amarav Masna, in halach Rabbi Yeshua. Two versions of Rav Masna, whether or not the halacha does or does not follow like Rabbi Yeshua. Bisham lamandam halach Rabbi Yeshua, it's the rich. So for Rav Masna to tell me that the halacha is in fact going like Rabbi Yeshua, I totally understand that, because without him saying so, obviously I would have thought the halacha does not go like Rabbi Yeshua. But he's a yachid. But if you're going to work with the nusach that Rav Masna says the halacha does not follow like Rabbi Yeshua, well, why does he have to say that? Wouldn't we have known that already? He's a yachid. He's against the rabbin. So the Gemara goes on to explain. So the Gemara says, look, even though he's a yachid, but truth of the matter is, he's making a lot of sense. Because if he does not allow it, so then people are going to not shecht it. And once again, it's a monea of Simchas Yom Tov. So kamash malan. So the Gemara says, but wait one second. When it comes to the hides, so there was an allowance to basically give some sort of treatment to the hides so that they don't spoil. So why by the hides did the Chachamim allow for some form of treatment? And meanwhile, when it comes to the Chalev, no treatment whatsoever is allowed. As we now turn to the top of the Amud Beis. So the Gemara says, when it comes to the hides, so what you do is you put it down in front of where people walk. Truth of the matter is, says the Gemara, is that that is something that is not so obvious. It is not so conspicuous. People sit down on hides. Even raw, unprocessed hides, people sit down on it. So the fact that you're putting down in front of people so they can walk on it, not as obvious. However, but over here, if you're allowing any kind of treatment of the fats, of the chalev, so immediately people are going to say, oh, you know, do you know why the Chachamim allowed it? So it doesn't spoil. Mali lemishtechinu, mali lemimlechinu. Well, if we're allowed to air it out, so for sure we're allowed to salt it, meaning people will immediately come to the realization that the Chachamim allowed me to do treatment, and then it's going to be really hard to discriminate. Well, what's the difference between a treatment of airing it out versus a treatment of salting it? And so that's why the Chachamim were concerned, the Tanakhama of the Brisa was concerned in this particular case, more so than the case of the hides. I'm Rav Yudam Shmuel, Molech Adam Kama Chatichos Basar, Bevas Achas Afa Bishen Atzarech Ela Lechaticha Achas. A couple of the terim given by the Amoraim, we start with a heter given by Rav Yudam Shmuel. And that is that, let's say, you want to salt a piece of meat in order to eat it. Now, it happens to be that there's a lot of meat over here, and you're not going to be eating all this meat on Yantiv. But at the same time, however, you would like to salt them all. But meanwhile, salting a piece of meat that you don't need right now is not mutter on Yantiv. But at this point in time, it's only going to take one action to salt all of them together. So Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel says, you're allowed to do that. You're allowed to salt all the pieces of meat together, even though you know full well you're not going to be eating all those pieces of meat. But since it's done bevasachas, so therefore it would be perfectly fine. Rav Adabarava Marim Amalach Karmar Gama. Rav Adabarava would do the following harama. Harama is a loophole, but loophole which is licensed and permitted by the Chachamim, and that is that you can salt one piece of meat and then say to yourself, you know what, I want another piece, a different piece. And you can go through that process and end up salting all the various pieces of meat. So that's something that would be allowed, that would be permitted. Tosfos points out This is a common practice that he did back in the day. Taptosos v'chem regilma ha'olam shem ma'arimim. Now the Bach adds in the word over here, vitzolin. So what they used to do was roast a lot of meat on Yantav. In other words, yishefta, you roasted a lot of meat on Yantav, even though you're only going to be ending up eating a small portion of it. Tosfos points out that you're going to be eating the kavod, the liver. But nevertheless, since the action of cooking it is basically the same action, so one can do all of it knowing, even though you're not going to end up eating all of it on Yantav, and you already know you're not going to eat all of it on Yantav, but since it's done in one action, so therefore it's going to be mutter. We are up to the next Mishnah, the last Mishnah we're going to be covering in today's daf. We already touched this Mishnah earlier a couple days ago in the daf, and that is putting the shutters back on the storefronts. Now, I say storefronts over here. We are not talking about an actual storefront where it is a brick and mortar and is connected to the ground. The storefronts over here are basically large closets where the store owners would keep their wares and end up selling them. And yes, we're talking about selling them on Yantav. Later in the Masechta, we're going to be talking about how transactions are to be done on Yantav. But for the purposes of Ochel Nefesh, eating on Yantav, so one can both buy and sell in the market various food items. There are going to be a number of points made regarding the restrictions of what exactly, how you can go through the transaction, how you can sell on Yantav, but that is not our topic. Our topic over here in our Gemara is a really singular focused topic regarding the opening of the shutters. These closets that are holding your wares. So there's a shutter on the front. I'm going to guess that the shutters have some sort of lock on them. And what you're going to do now is that you're going to open up the shutter on Yantav. Now, the shutters are connected to a closet. So as the Gemara is about to point out, so this is not going to be a violation of Binyan Ustira. Binyan Ustira is only when it is connected to the ground. This is a moving closet. It's a moving storage unit. And so therefore, it has the status of a kli. And ain binyan ve'ain kelim b'stira, ain binyan ve'ain stira b'kelim. Beit Shammai, on the other hand, takes a more stringent position in our Mishnah. He says that you can't even remove the shutters. And Beis Hillel says not only can you remove them, you can even return them. My trisim, we start with the Gemara, Amar Ula, trise chanuyos. Okay, so the Gemara just simply gives an explanation of what we're describing over here. And I attempted already to describe it with the help of Rashi. The Amar Ula. Get to a big part of today's daf. Ula makes the following statement, Shal Shadvarim, Hitur Sofa Mishum Tchilasam. So there's a number of things, so the Ula points to three specifically, where the Chachamim were matir step number two, so that people would go ahead and do step number one. Meaning that there are certain circumstances where the Chachamim felt that in order so that people will in fact do step number one, they gave an additional heter, and that they allowed step number two. All this will become clear as we go through the three different examples. Ve'elu hein. Or lifnei adorsim v'trisei chanuyos v'chazru v'tia b'mikdash. I'm going to explain each one of them as we go through them in the Gemara. Rachva amar Rabbi Yehuda afa poseh chavito matkal b'isaso agav regal v'aliba de Rabbi Yehuda da'amar yigmor. And then Rachva adds a fourth one to the list, in which were the Chachamim allowed step number two, so in order to ensure that step number one is done. And again, I know I read it quickly, and we're going to go over it a little bit later. In the meantime, however, we're going to first start off with the three mentioned by Ula. Number one, or lifnei hadorsan. So the hide that you are allowed to put, in other words, the animal that you shechted on Yantav, the hide that you flayed from the animal, you're allowed to take that hide and put it in front of people who are walking by. So that begins the ibud treatment, a process that is not actual ibud, but nevertheless is going to at least make sure that it doesn't spoil, that the hide doesn't spoil. An allowance given by the Chachamim, Ula describes it as an allowance that's done in order to allow for step number one. Gemara goes on to explain. Tanina. Why? What is Ula teaching me? A Mishnah? It's a Mishnah. So, Mao de tematama de beisel mishum de chazalim is gai alayu vafil amer of yomtav nami. Kamash malani tirasofa mishum tchilasim de yomtav in der of yomtav lo. Gemara went on to explain that had it not been for Ula, I might have thought that the heter of beisel, it's just simply because the hides are not muksa. You could simply sit on the hides. and therefore they're not muksa, and therefore there would be no problem not only to sit on the hides, but even to put it down and have people walk on them. Because it's just simply perfectly okay. Gemara went on to explain, no. In other words, this allowance to put the hides down in front of people who are walking, that was step number two in order to allow step number one. What's step number one? Shechting the animal on Yontif. That's why the Chachamim allowed you to take the hides and put in front of people so that people will be incentivized to shech the animal on Yontif. And therefore, if the animal was shechted prior to Yontif, so then you don't have this allowance. The only allowance, step number two over here, is only allowed to allow step number one, but step number one is shechting on Yontif. Okay. And if you shechted the animal prior to Yontif, so then you are not given this allowance to simply take the hide and put it in front of people on Yontif itself. And the Gemara now is going to make this point two more times with the two other examples. As far as the shutters are concerned, the rabbi is allowed to return the shutters to the chest. So the Gemara says, that's a Mishnah. What's Ula coming to teach me? Mao de Tema. Tamayu de Beisila, Mishum de Ein Binyam Bekelim, Ein Stira Bekelim, Vafilu de Batim Nami. I might have thought that the Beisila's allowance is a strictly halachic point of, because we're not talking about something connected to the ground, because the chest over here are Kelim, so therefore one could have thought, one could have argued that this is strictly a Binyan issue, where Beisila's Mako. And it doesn't matter whether the chest is out in the market, whether the chest is in someone's private home. It would always be okay. And kamashmalani tirasofa mishum tchalas and dechaniosin debatim lo. And so what the Chachamim are coming to teach us, what Ula is coming to teach us, is that no, this is the allowance to put the shutter back on is only so people would take the shutter down and sell on Yontif. In other words, this is strictly for the purposes of Simchas Yontif, so that people would be able to go to the market in order to purchase. But in other words, but this is not a heter that's allowed in people's private homes. And finally, number three, Chazaros Retia beMeitash Namitanina, the putting back of a bandage on a wound in the Beis HaMeitash. So the Gemara says it's a Mishnah. Machzirin Retia beMikdash Shavala beMedina, putting a bandage back on a wound. The bandage had some sort of salve on it. And one is allowed to do so, but only in the Beis HaMikdash, meaning when the Kohen is doing the Avodah, and in order to do the Avodah properly, so there could not be any chatzitza between his hand and that which he's doing the Avodah with. And so therefore, in order for him to do the Avodah, he has to take off the bandage. And if the Chachamim did not allow him to put it back on again, so once again, he would think twice, he would pause before taking it off and doing the Avodah. So in order to make sure that he's going to do the Avodah, step number one, the Chachamim allowed step number two, which is to put the bandage back on again after he finishes doing the Avodah. So once again, we have an allowance given by the Chachamim of Sofo, Mishum Tchilaso. And the Gemara goes on to say, Ma'u Detema, now, had it not been for Ula, and all I had was a Mishnah, so once again, for a third time, we could have arrived at an incorrect conclusion, an understanding. Mao de tema tama mai mishum de ein shvos b'mikdash afilu kohen delav bar avodahu kamash malan. So I might have thought that this has nothing to do with being matir sofa mishum tchilaso. I might have thought this is strictly based on the premise that there are no isuri de rabban in the Beis HaMikdash, and over here, at worst, at best, a person is only going to be violating an isur de rabban and not an isur min haTorah. And so it would be okay, not only for a Kohen doing the Avodah, it would be okay for a Kohen, even who is not doing the Avodah. So Kamash Malan, he threw a sofa mishum tchilaso, the bar Avodah in the law, bar Avodah law. Only the Kohen doing the Avodah is given this heter. Any Kohen not doing the Avodah is not given the heter, because the heter, again, is only sofa mishum tchilaso, only to encourage Kohanim doing the Avodah. And now we get to the fourth one that was added by Rachva. Poseches chaviso nami tanina, opening up a wine casket on Yontif. Now, this is based on what we learned in Chagiga, what we will learn in Chagiga. Poseches chavito maschal b'isaso agav arego, Rabbi Yehuda amar yigmor, v'chachamim omrim lo yigmor. So over here, just as a quick background in terms of understanding this Mishnah in Chagiga, so we know that Amei Haaretz are not careful about Tumat Tahara. If an Amei Haaretz comes over to a chaver and touches his wine, the wine's going to be tame. So that is the general position regarding Tumat Tahara. Meanwhile, on Regel, on Yontif, So the Chachamim gave a heter. Everyone's going to be in the Beis HaMikdash, both Chaver and Am Haaretz alike. And typically speaking, people do find themselves in a higher state of Kedusha and Tahara on Yantiv. So the Chachamim gave the following heter. And that is that on Yantiv, so the Am Haaretz is not going to be treated with Tumas Am Haaretz. And we are going to assume that on Yantiv itself, in the vicinity of Yerushalayim, the Beis HaMikdash, the Am Haaretz is going to be Tahor. That's our assumption. Well, Rabbi Yehuda says, I'll tell you what. Not only is that going to be a heter on Yantiv itself, but even afterwards. So for example, let's say a chaver who is selling wine in Yerushalayim over Yantiv. So let's say that he opened up his wine on Yantiv, and Am Haaretz comes over, and he touches the wine. So on Yantiv itself, the wine remains tahor. What Rav Yehuda says is that's not just true on Yantiv itself, but even after Yantiv, what the chaver is allowed to do is finish the barrel even after Yantiv in a state of tahara. Now, that's the Mishnah in Chagiga. Now, the Chachamim argue on Rav Yehuda, but we're focusing right now on the Shita of Rav Yehuda. Now, if I had the Mishnah, so once again, wouldn't I know this already? Meaning, wouldn't I know that the Chachamim were matir sofa mishum tchilaso? And once again, the Gemara says not necessarily. I might have thought that the idea that the Am Haaretz is tar on Yantiv on Regel, so that's not just a special dispensation. I might have thought that the Chachamim believed that Meikar Hadin, the Am Haaretz is in fact tahor. And so therefore, not only if they touch wine that was opened on Yantiv, but even if they touch wine that was opened prior to Yantiv, I might have thought that this heter existed. So the Chiddush is no. The heter is only for wine that was opened on Yantiv itself. So itir sofa mishum tchilaso, hitchel in lo, hitchel lo. So, and the reason why the Chachamim allowed it is because the Chachamim wanted to incentivize the Chaverim to open up their barrels on Yantiv. Meaning those barrels are going to be sold to people. People are going to enjoy wine on Yantiv. But if the chaver is concerned that every time he opens a barrel and you're going to have an Am Haaretz touch it and it's going to become tameh, so he's going to be disincentivized of opening up the barrel. So therefore the Chachamim made this special heter, but only to incentivize the chaverim to open a barrel. Once you have a barrel that's already open, so that's not covered by this heter. That's why I needed to teach that this halacha is in fact connected to being matir the sofa mishum tchilaso. Okay. And then the Gemara just finishes off with a technical question. Ula my time lo amar ha. So Ula, when he gave the examples, remember Ula gave three examples, and it was only the Amor Rachva who added this fourth example. Why didn't Ula add this example? Meaning this seems to be a really good example. So the Gemara says, Haba pilta lo kamari. So Ula didn't want to get involved in the machlokas, and this is a machlokas between Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim, and Ula wanted to stay away from machlokas, which the Gemara says that's laughable. So the Gemara says Hanachnami plukta ninu. All the examples of Ula are machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. So the Gemara says no, Beis Shammai b'makom Beis Hillel eina mishnah. Now, when you have machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, so that's not a machlokas, meaning it is a machlokas. But as far as the way halacha views it, as far as our Masorah is concerned, so really it's only one opinion. It's Shitas Beis Hillel. And so therefore, we view it as a non-machlokas. And so when Ula quotes these examples, basically he's able to focus just on Shitas Beis Hillel and not even concern the Shita Beis Shammai. Really interesting. The Gemara says this a number of times throughout Shas, that Beis Shammai is just simply a non-regarded shita relative to that of Beis Hillel. Why should that be? That certainly demands an explanation. But meanwhile, the Gemara says that all the time. Masha'enkin, when you have a machlokas between like Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim, like that Mishnah Chagiga, so that's viewed as a machlokas. And the Gemara says that Ula didn't want to get involved in anything that is controversial. Akan, we're going to stop over here. Let's quickly recap. Let's summarize our daf. First part of today's daf, we spent a lot of time discussing was what happens when you select the three birds and next morning you find two birds. So the halacha is very simple, very clear. We'll assume that those two birds are from the original and therefore it's going to be mutter. And then the point of discussion, lengthy discussion in the Gemara, is how does this relate to the Brisa Meister Sheni? Is our Mishnah going only like the Shita of Rebbe? Is it also going like the Shita of the Chachamim? That was number one. Number two, the Gemara then went over the various other points of our Mishnah. What happens when the birds were selected in the birdhouse, found later, discovered later in front of the birdhouse? How does that impact regarding the Rove versus Karov paradigm? And even though Rabbi Chanina says Rove beats Karov, is our Mishnah going to litigate that Pesach of Rabbi Chanina? Maybe yes, maybe no. Gemara discussed. And then finally, the other traditions regarding birds and how far they're ready to wander away from their nest when they are unable to fly. Our next big discussion that we had in the Mishnah on Yud Aleph was an Eli, which is a Klisha Malachal Le'Isser. According to Tosos, it's even more. It's Muksa Machmas Chisaron Kis. Regardless, you're allowed to use it for the purposes of Simchas Yontov. Again, Machlus Bicham and Beisola, but Beisola says you're allowed to use it for Simchas Yontov. Also, you shaft an animal to hide. So you're allowed to put it in front of people so that they're going to start stepping on it. And it will give some treatment to the hide so that you will not be losing the hide. If in fact you're going to be forced into position, we're going to lose the hide. So then you're going to think twice before even shafting the animal and be moneh from Simchas Yontov. So something that was allowed by the Chachamim to encourage people to shaft animals. On the Amud Aleph, a lot of discussion regarding Shitas Beis Shammai and whether or not Beis Shammai is ever concerned that if I start a process, will I back off in the middle and end up being involved in Tiltul Shel Oleg Tzarich? Evidence that he's worried about what the Gemara describes as being Mimlach. Evidence that he's not worried, and the Gemara trying to make distinctions and try to create Shalom. The rest of Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, going to the top of Yud Aleph Amud Beis, goes over other ways that one could treat both the hides and also the chalev. In other words, when you shecht an animal, you run the risk of losing the hides and the chalev. Is there anything that you could do to try to preserve both of them? So that's what the Gemara discussed from the bottom of Yud Aleph to the top of Yud Aleph Amud Beis. Next, Mishnah brings down the machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel regarding taking off and replacing and returning the shutters to the chest of the mochrim of the sellers, and Beis Hillel allows it, not only taking off the shutter but putting back on again. And then we went through the list of ula. The Amud Beis today highlighted by the list of ula, in which ula says that there are three times in halacha where the chachamim were matir sofa mishum tchilaso. They gave an extended heter. Even on the second step, so that people would make sure to, in fact, do the first step. Because without that heter being extended to the second step, people wouldn't go to the first step. So Ula counted it out. Truth of the matter is, they're all Mishnayos, two of them here in Beitza, one in Erevin. And the Gemara points out that without Ula, I might have reinterpreted the Mishnah in some other manner. That's why I needed Ula to tell me that it falls under the context of the Chachamim were being matir, sofa mishum tchilaso. And then a possible additional fourth that was added by Rachva regarding the wine of a chaver on Yantiv, where according to Rabbi Yehuda, not only is it going to be tahor on Yantiv itself, but even after Yantiv, you could finish the wine off in a state of tahara, and that is a heter that was given by the Chachamim, where they were where that heter was to encourage the chaverim to open up the barrel on Yantiv itself.